Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
How the hell are you? So Wednesday, January the 5th, 2011, and it's the radio program on the Fan Radio Network on Sirius Channel 97 on Rogers Sportsnet in high definition. I haven't seen those promos yet. Have you seen those promo?
No.
We have a new promo, apparently.
Do we?
He's nodding in there, the idiot's
nodding. What does it feature?
Have you seen it more than once? No, only once. Maybe it only aired once. They've done that before, too.
So this features you, I suppose.
Created a promo, and it ran once. They did that a couple years ago, and then it never ran again.
This is not the one you wandering around the empty sky dome.
Oh, I don't know. I've never seen it. I don't know anything about it.
This is something brand new?
You have to ask him. She told me it's brand new.
But you didn't go out and shoot something, did you? You would have told me that if you'd gone out.
I don't shoot anything. I'm not like you.
No, you did that one. You did those ones at Rogers Center.
I don't kill animals like you.
I don't kill animals.
You kill animals. You kill defenseless fish.
I do kill defenseless fish.
You are a fish murderer. Anyway, so enough of that. I haven't seen it yet. So we think we're on Sportsnet still. Also, later on the program, Paul Beeston, the CEO of the Blue Jays, and Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. This is a first. A Blue Jay going into the Hall of Fame.
Yes, indeed.
Are we allowed to say that?
Well, I got to ask him. But I have a feeling it's a Blue Jay going into the Hall of Fame. You wouldn't know it on some of the websites. And
ESPN's got a picture in a Cleveland Indians uniform.
I just was looking at it again.
I'm insulted by that. I wonder if he is. Here he is, the Hall of Famer. It's about damn time. A year late. Here's Robbie Alomar. Well, congratulations.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're doing great. How are you doing? You excited?
Well, I'm doing great. I'm excited. It's great news today for myself, for the city of Toronto, for the city in Puerto Rico, and from all my family.
So there's a picture, Robbie, of you on the ESPN website in a Cleveland Indians uniform. What do you make of that?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I hope that they understand that my heart and soul is here in Toronto, and I hope that they understand that this is where I won the two World Series and got great years, and hopefully they understand who I want to be represented by, and hopefully they can pick the Toronto Blue Jay hat.
So you, I guess the deal is you get to suggest who you want to go in as. Or what team you want to represent going in. But ultimately, the decision is the Hall of Fame. Is that true?
Yes, it's a Hall of Fame decision. You can... I don't know how this go, but I will give them what I think, my thoughts, and hopefully they listen to what I have to say.
Robbie, I was thinking when it became official today, I was thinking about your old man, who really your guiding light in baseball, guy who played in the major leagues and worked for every day he was in the major leagues and loved the game. What's his reaction been to you getting in?
Well, when I got my reaction, it was thrilled. It was thrilled that his son is going into the Hall of Fame. That all the work that I did. All the advice that he gave me meant something, and he was a thrill, and a humble father.
Many people, myself included, and I think Stephen as well, thought you should have got in last year. You should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm sure on this day it probably doesn't matter a lot to you. You're probably not thinking much about it. But what was the last year like? Were you scratching your head over the last year? Were you upset, wondering why you didn't get in the first ballot?
I was a little disappointed. But on the other hand, it is what it is. You have to know how to take the good and bad. I think this year will be much sweeter. I have enjoyed it more. I have more votes, and I'm not gonna look back at what happened last year. I just wanna enjoy this one, and represent Toronto with a little pride.
Yeah, when I see that 90% there, Robbie, that's you know, you never get unanimous in the Hall of Fame. Baseball writers are a weird breed, but that's one of the highest totals in history, I believe.
Yeah, that's what I heard. It's one of the highest. I didn't expect it to be that high, but like I say, you know, this year, if they thought that they made a mistake last year, then they want to maybe vote it for me this year. So I'm so happy and so humble, and I don't know how to put words right now, because the assignment is so big that I feel good about it.
What does it mean to you, Robbie, to go in with one of the a person that we've become close to over the years? Well, I've known Pat since 1977, but Pat Gillick was, as you know, elected. He will be inducted into the Hall of Fame beside you. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot to me, because a lot of people don't know. When I was 16 years old, Pat was a scout and was trying to sign me when I was in Puerto Rico. But I decided to go with the San Diego Padres. Pat and me had a long relationship, and then he trained me to come here to Toronto from the San Diego Padres.
Right.
So to me, this is an honor to be going into the Hall of Fame at the same time he's going in. Pat is the greatest GM that I ever played for, and so far he's done a great job with all different organizations that he's been involved with.
How much do you think about those two World Series years? As you're going through them, you don't know what the outcome is going to be. You think you have a good baseball team, but as time passes, I know that every time I go back and take a look at the rosters of the 92 team and then the 93 team, which changed dramatically, which is really intriguing, and people forget that. But I mean, those two teams were as good a teams as I can recall in the last two decades. I mean, those weren't just two World Series teams. Those were two really, really tremendous baseball teams, weren't they?
Well, we were a great team, and not only that, we played the game the right way. We played the game when we needed to move guys over. We did that. We can manage ourselves. That's how good we were. We had great pitching staff. We had great bullpen. You name it, you know, we were close to each other. There was no crying here and there. I think we all had one goal in mind, and that was just to win. And that's why we did so good.
But that was a team of extraordinary confidence, maybe as much as anything else, Robbie. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, we were real confident that we were going to go out there and win almost every game.
Yeah, not arrogant, but you just believed that. You know, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what happened early in a ball game, you guys were going to find a way to pull one out.
No, we believe in ourselves. We believe in ourselves every day. Every day we went to the ballpark, we only one goal in mind, that's to win that game. And we were the team to beat. You know, a lot of people didn't want to face us. It was a great bunch of guys.
You ever think, you thought at all, Robbie, about the fact that you may well be the only Hall of Famer off those two teams? When you know there's some other great players on those teams, but Jack Morris is still he moved up in the voting this year, so he's a possibility. But you may be the only guy. You may be it.
Well, we have one of the guys, Paul Molitor, went as a Milwaukee Brewers.
That's right. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and we have Dave Winfield, who played with us. It was another Hall of Fame that I had the chance to play with. But maybe I will be the only Blue Jay for now, but there's got to be a few more coming.
You think so?
Yeah, I think, if Holiday continue to go the way he's going, hopefully, I don't know what hat he will wear, or Carlos Delgado, if he gets back to play the game and get over 500 home runs, I think he has a chance.
What, is there a, I know we've talked about this kind of stuff before, but today it seems more mm-hmm. appropriate. Is there a, is there a moment of your career that stands out for you, or is it that maybe that first World Series, that ground ball, that flip to first base in Atlanta, that gave you guys the World Series?
Yeah.
Is that the moment?
I think the moment that the first World Series is always a special. The second one is sweet too, but the first one is a special because Blue Jays had never won one World Series, and that was the first one. And that was the special team. Special manager that we have here, and it was a special to play in front of this crowd. I remember, the fans can not even buy a ticket here.
50,000 every single night, right?
Every single night. You appreciate coming to the ballpark every day and play the game of baseball here. You appreciate what the fan did for us, and as ball player, when you see all your fans behind you. It was a thrill.
It was also interesting, too, because it was an era, and you've spent enough time in Toronto to understand this, mm-hmm. that we have something of an inferiority complex and to a great degree, that big-time athletes may not always want to come and play in Toronto. But at that time with the Blue Jays, the list of guys who wound up coming to Toronto and being a contributor, and you mentioned Winfield and Ricky Henderson and Paul Molitor, David Cohn, all kinds of guys that came from other organizations.
Mm-hmm.
When they walked in the clubhouse and walked onto that field and with 50,000 people in the stands, did you, as a player, did you get a sense that they understood how special that was?
Well, I think a lot of the ball players didn't understand what is to play here at that time. When we got, for example, Ricky Henderson, and he came to play with us in the team that we won, he say, "What a great organization! What a great teammates we have here! I wish I would have known this before."
Right.
So those are the little things that people don't understand. But when they come here, we were here before. We made those people feel comfortable, and then they kind of understood what is to play here in Toronto, and in those years. And I hope that people understand that playing baseball here in Canada is great. You know, the people knows about the game, and it's a lot of fun playing baseball here in Canada. It's a beautiful city and beautiful people.
Have you got a new deal done with the Blue Jays? Are you're going to be involved?
Well, I'm involved with the Blue Jays here and there. You know, I'm like a roving instructor,
right?
And I went to the minor leagues. I think. Last year, I went in November. I went to the instructional league.
Right.
Work with some of the young guys. I think we have some good young talent, and I would like to continue to do that and come here in a special occasion and do something for the Blue Jays.
Well, Beeston's going to be on with us next. We'll pass along your wishes to him.
Yeah.
I know you've got to run. You got a flight to catch. Congratulations. We'll look forward to having the opportunity to talk to you before the induction ceremonies in Cooperstown this summer.
Thank you one more time, and to the fans. This is for you. You know, this one is a victory, not only for myself, but for the whole entire Toronto and the organization. And thank you guys for being so good to me through my years.
See you soon, Robbie. Thank you, pal.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Robbie Alomar, Hall of Famer, and deservedly so, missed by that much last year, gets in on his second try, as expected.
And the first, I guess, the first real Blue Jay Hall of Famer. Played on the two teams. Winfield was here. Molitor was here. Both of them played on one of those teams.
Right.
This guy, even though he started with the Padres and finished elsewhere, everybody, I don't think any Blue Jay fan thinks of him as anything but a Toronto Blue Jay.
No, it's hard to imagine when you look back how little time Robbie actually spent in Toronto, though.
Yeah. And think about how he left. I was thinking about that today.
Well, and I'm going to ask Beeston about that.
Yep.
About the departure of Robbie Alomar. How did that come to pass? Why did he allow that to happen? A guy who was clearly the signature player on a team full of tremendous talent.
And didn't want to leave.
And didn't really want to leave. How do they let him go? What was it? And Robbie Alomar wasn't at the end of his career. I think he was 30.
Oh, God, no. Remember,
30,
look,
31.
He went to Baltimore.
Yeah.
They went to the postseason with Gillick. He went to Cleveland. They went to the World Series.
Yeah.
He had a lot left in him at that point. He was in his prime. And I remember it was Gordash with the GM. There was a lot of kind of whispers about that. He wasn't a leader in the clubhouse. And it was when ownership was in flux. There were a lot of...
I wonder if that was the issue. I wonder if it was... Because that was when Interbrew took over.
It was around the same time. And it was kind of the beginning. You look back now and you say, when did things start to go sour? Because, we're still bathing in the glow of those World Series. People thought they'd just get back and be good again.
Yeah, I wonder if it was economic.
Well...
We're going to find out.
We'll find out.
Paul Beeston, the CEO of the Blue Jays, will join us, and we'll ask some of those questions. Reflections on Robbie Alomar, and how did inarguably, the greatest player in this franchise's history, albeit a 33-year history, but how do you let him go when he didn't want to? This wasn't a Roy Halladay, I can't win here, I want to go. How did you let Robbie Alomar go? We'll talk about it when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, and Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
24 minutes past the hour. So I have a question for Paul Beeston. And fortuitously, here he is, the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays. Hello, Beast.
Robert, how are you, sir?
Happy New Year.
And the same?
Robbie Alomar is going to the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
What the hell were you thinking in 1996 when you let him leave?
I thought the same thing when he was asked that question today. I don't know what happened. When you reflect back on it with his great years in Baltimore and Cleveland after he left us, I have no idea. Money certainly wasn't an issue, and we should have done everything to keep him. But I just can't tell you how happy I am for Robbie. But I think for the fans and for the organization, everybody else, I mean, to see what happened today.
Now, my friend over here, you may remember Stephen Brunt.
Stephen?
Hey, Paul.
He offered earlier that Robbie wanted to stay, and you kicked him out of town.
I didn't actually say it quite that way.
Well,
but
I'm paraphrasing.
But there was a falling out.
Well, I think there was at some point in time in the 95 season, after we traded David Cohn, there seemed to be at that point in time a kind of let's relook at the whole organization. As you recall, Paul Molitor left, Al Leiter left, Devo left, a couple of them went down to Florida, and Molly went to Minnesota. Robbie was gone, and it was a matter of changing at that point in time. Having said that, I mean, you know, Robbie is probably the best second baseman in the last 75 years, and maybe the best second baseman ever. And to let him get out of our grasp, I mean, it was an error. At the same point in time, you look back on and say we're fortunate to have five great years, because we did see him when he wasn't any better. I mean, you know, we saw him for the 5 years when he played his trade as well as anybody at any position in the game.
Yeah, but he was just as good in the first 2 years in Baltimore.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And, you know, Bob, it wasn't just the matter of what he did. It's when he did it. I mean, you know, when you needed a key defensive play, he made it. And you know, the one thing about him going to the Hall of Fame today is watching television and watching actually the baseball network and looking at the plays that he made and how he got to them and how he threw people out from his knees. I mean, you know, we were fortunate. We took for granted some of the things that were happening just as being routine.
But, you know, Paul, the moment I always remember, and it's not a play in the field, but it was sitting in the Oakland Coliseum and the 92 ALCS, when it looks like you guys are going to flop in the playoffs again, and everybody, I remember kind of in a sleepy press box and everybody making their dinner reservations, and Dennis Eckersley owned you, and Robbie Alomar took him deep, and that, to me, that's the watershed moment in the whole history of the franchise.
I think you're right about that, and we've always said that. But it was even more than that, because if you remember Eckersley, I think, got Sprague for the final out in the eighth.
Yep.
And, you know, and he kind of shot him down with his forefinger and his thumb.
Yes, he did.
Like a sheriff. So then all of a sudden, Robbie comes up, and Devo's on. And, you know, it wasn't just the way that's what Robbie, when I say Robbie, had the sense of the moment. You know, like, he got it when we needed it. It wasn't just to get home runs. He got home runs that were important. And, you know, and he had the ability, without looking at Eckersley, you know, to put his hands in the air and told him everything that he wanted to do with what he did on the field. And, you know, I'm with you, Steve, on that one, and I think we all believe that. But, you know, there was no turning back after that point in time, and there was this kind of this childish joy to it of what he was doing. It was just spectacular.
All right. Was he a problem in the clubhouse?
No, I don't think so. I mean, the guy who could answer that best would be the players, or the person that people could ask that. I don't think anybody would say that. Robbie was his own person. Robbie, in a lot of ways, was a loner, but at the same point in time, he was a terrific teammate. Robbie measured his successes by wins. I don't think that Robbie counted his hits. I don't think that Robbie counted individual statistics. I think Robbie counted championships, and Robbie wanted to play right through to the end of October. I don't think he was ever a problem. I don't think at the same time, you know, he was a first leader. I mean, he had something that nobody had. Like, he didn't have to take BP if he didn't want to. He didn't have to take infield if he didn't want to. You know, he could just do it, but he did go out there, and, you know, he just he led that way, but, I mean, it wasn't necessary.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about that today when I was writing about him for today's paper, Paul, and I think the word I used was cipher, but maybe that's not quite. He wasn't quite as much of a mystery as that, but he was – my sense of him was that he was, not a clubhouse leader, not a clubhouse lawyer, was not one of the – there were cliques, and he was not involved in any of those cliques particularly. You know, there were certainly guys who – even guys who came to the team for a year or two who made their presence felt. I think he did his own thing and went back to his hotel room and did whatever he did there. But the manager loved him, and what he did on the field, he was impeccable, right?
Yeah, Steve, I think you've got it right on. I think you've analyzed him perfectly. He did his own thing, you know, and he did hang out by himself. And he came to the ballpark and went out on the field. Then when it was over, he left. But, you know, he never, ever gave Cito any back talk. He never, had any. You can't think of one issue that he had with players. And you know, players like to see guys that deliver when that's required. And that's what he did. And they knew that any ball hit to the right side of the infield, Robbie had a chance of making a play, and I watched them today, and I can't believe some of the plays that he made.
Now, the one thing we didn't talk about with him, and it does come up, and it's certainly come up, is the Hirschbeck incident, and
right.
There are two things. One is that it's in terms of his on-field behavior in his entire career, it stands out because he didn't do that.
No, never saw him do anything similar to that.
And the other thing is that he reconciled with Hirschbeck, and if Hirschbeck, and he asked for forgiveness and was given forgiveness, and for me, that's plenty. But I know people keep bringing it up. What do you think?
Well, I think that's right. But you know what? Robbie acknowledges he made a mistake. I heard him at the press conference today, and he's probably had to answer it for many, many years. But the reality of the situation is that Robbie said that, we're all human. I made a mistake. I apologize to it. I've made made amendments with John and the family, and I think he's ready to move on. Would he wish that never happened in his life? Without question. I mean, it's in the front page of the Toronto Star today, and the day you go into the Hall of Fame, above the fold in the front page. Not sports. I mean, the picture of Robbie, and he can never get away from that. But on the other hand, he's not trying to say that he didn't do it. He's not trying to say that there was a reason for it. He said, "I made a mistake." I mean, we can all learn from that.
With Paul Beason, the president CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays, I still can't get over the fact that you let him go.
No, I can't either.
You should have blamed those Belgian guys, Paul. That's what I would have done.
Blame everybody.
I would have said Interbrew forced me to do it.
I have to take responsibility.
The buck could stop in Brussels. What's the problem? No, they're not around anymore. You can blame them.
I can't do that. I can't do that. You have to take responsibility for certain things. And when I think about what he did after that, and some of the series that he had, and the playoffs that he continued to perform so well in, you say, well, how did that happen? How did it happen? I don't know.
I'm sitting here and I can still picture his swing. It wasn't maybe the most unique swing, but the one thing I remember about it, you see almost no players today do this. Robbie had his hands very low,
right?
When he started, especially when he batted from the left side,
right?
Maybe less so from the right side. I don't really remember, but I remember he had his hands were always very low, and I remember Robbie his swing was absolutely perfectly parallel with the ground, no matter where the pitch was thrown. And I can remember that stride. You remember the home run off Eckersley?
Yes,
it was that long, low stride. It looked like he took a low fastball or slider or something and just literally swept it over the right field fence. It was it's a swing I'll never forget.
It really was, Bob. I mean, but more importantly, I guess when you think about Robbie, I mean, I just keep on going back to Eckersley. I keep on going back to defensive plays.
No, I understand that.
Stolen bases. We can do whatever we want to do. But was there anybody who did it all and did it so consistently and for such a sustained period of time?
And baseball intellect, I guess, Paul, is the other
exactly.
thing. Instinct, right? And I think and I go back to his dad and. You know, Robbie, what's the one thing he says all the time is, you know, you play the game the right way. And I think he had that pounded into him from the time he was 5 years old. And not that, you know, he wanted to play baseball. He was hung around the ballpark all the time as a kid. But I think that the old man said there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. That's why he became a switch hitter, right?
There's no question. I remember, Steve, when we first traded for him, he was arbitration eligible. And we were out in, and the first time we met him was out in California at an arbitration. And his agent at that point was Scott Boras.
Boris.
And subsequently, Robbie and he parted ways. But we went to an arbitration. Arbitrations, you know, are business-like, and we always say it's just business. But, you know, it's not all talking about positives when you're trying to make your case. And I remember when I was over, he said, okay, I see you in spring training. Like, there was no animosity, there was no hatred, there was nothing. I mean, he was going back, this was part of business. And a lot of guys say, you know, it's just a business, but they don't really believe it. You know, and it becomes a little more personal. With Robbie, it wasn't that way. I mean, Robbie was a straight, you know, ball player that knew that it was business in some ways, but he wanted to play the game and he could hardly wait to get to spring training.
Did his social activities much talked about, speculated on, did they bother the ball club?
No, not at all. I mean, you know what? I don't think anything bothered the ball club as long as you performed well. You know, Robbie was single. Robbie was living in the city. Robbie was living in the hotel
for a long time,
right here at the Rogers Center.
Yep.
You know, and to be honest with you, there was never a time that he was late for batting practice. You know, and he showed up and he performed well. And you know, well, it didn't end the way that we probably would have liked to. After you say we didn't sign him, which is true. You know, the reality of the situation is that we couldn't complain about the way that he played at any point in time or being available to go on the field, and in his own ways was a very quiet leader.
Heck, I hope he wasn't late. He only had to get in an elevator.
Well, I was
going to
say,
practice is pretty damn easy.
A lot of guys have missed that elevator.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, like, he could hardly blame the traffic. Hey, Skip, sorry, traffic was bad. I couldn't make it. Where he was in right field, man.
Right. Well, he was never early either.
Oh, well, me neither. You know, what does that mean?
Exactly.
Well, to date, the greatest ball player this city has ever had the privilege to watch, I think.
I think one of the greatest athletes the city's seen too, and yeah. You know, we were very fortunate, and it was a special time. But you know, we're into the future, and we're hopeful that Robbie's going to be part of that future.
Well, I'll answer him.
For two weeks, he was down at the instructional league.
No, we talked to him about it. Yeah.
And you know, and he came back and he had ideas about prospects and how we can do things differently and teaching the young prospects as to the right way of playing the game. And I like what Steve's talking about there, about what Sandy Sr. was saying, you know, but you know, there is a way to comport yourself and to do it. And you know, if he can do that, he can be very valuable to take us to the direction that we want to do.
Are you going to give him that opportunity?
Yeah. I mean, there's not a question about it. We'd always love to give him the opportunity.
Well, because we just talked to him, you know, and I asked him about that.
I understand what he says. Robbie and I, like, it's there for his taking. Now,
okay.
I think once he finishes, you know, this initial 3 or 4 months before he's actually inducted, then his life will become a little bit more structured and it'll be okay. But he's gonna be very busy for the next 3 or 4 months. And I think it's going to be special because, you know, he's going to be up there on the stage with Pat.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be fantastic.
Great day for the organization. It's going to be a great day in Cooperstown.
For Canadian baseball.
It is.
Also have, as much as we'd like Tom, we do have Dave Van Horn going in too. So
that's right.
A special day for O-Canada.
Beast, good of you to join us. What a colossal.
Appreciate
I can't
it, Bob.
Believe
Thank
the
you.
Colossal blunder. 1995. Unbelievable.
Exactly. Well, I'm not going to fall into your trap. I'm going to say mistake made.
I will never let you forget it.
See you, Steve.
See you, Paul.
See you, Paul. Paul Beeston, CEO of the Blue Jays. And I say that with great affection.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, but.
That's why the Belgians had to get rid of him, though. Oh, wait, it didn't work that way, did it? No. Hang on. No, I'm rewriting history now.
Oh, that's not true.
See, blame the Belgians. It's the easiest thing in the world. Blame them for everything.
Well, I would have blamed them.
Yes.
And if Beeston had said it was the Belgians that did it.
Of course it was.
It would have been the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, his problem is, you know, he tries to be too honest.
Yeah.
Just blame the other guy. Not my. Hey, I didn't have anything to do with it. Call those Belgian guys. Those interbrewers. They're the ones that screwed this whole thing up. And I think they did, too.
Yes, I think there's some truth to that.
Hockey, 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 hockey. Glenn Healy next when Primetime continues. You're listening on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius 97, Rogers Sportsnet.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network and Sirius Channel 97.
Hey, you know what? It's a halfway point in the NHL season.
Exactly.
Well, it's never going to be exact. I mean, there's not a date.
But today is it.
Well, no. Well, maybe.
Just look at the number of games.
Atlanta, 42.
Close enough.
Washington, 41. There's a bunch of 40s. Chicago's right at the halfway point, 41. So, you know, in the next day or two, we're talking about the halfway point of the season.
There we go. How fortuitous that we have Glenn Healy with us then.
Yeah, half a commentator on the halfway point. There's Glenn Healy. Oh, no, I didn't mean that.
I'm halfway to dead.
Might be more than halfway, Healy. I sure as hell am. How
You're
are you?
The back nine for sure.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, yeah.
So I'm looking down the list here. Is it clear to you who the crappiest team in the NHL is? Is it New Jersey?
Oh, it has to be. Most disappointing too.
Yeah. They're shockingly crappy, aren't they?
You know, goals against has been their forte forever. And, you know, last in the East in goals against, their home record, 6 wins. It's bad enough to go to New Jersey just to go to a game when they win.
Yeah.
Have you been to the rink there?
No, I haven't.
It's a war zone. I mean, they basically have like a riot trailer set up for police protection. I mean, it's not pretty.
It's downtown Newark,
yeah,
right?
Not rioting hockey fans, I'm pointing. No,
it'll be pretty later. I mean, it's one of those areas that 20 years from now you're going to look back and go, wow, I should have bought there, because you can see Manhattan from where it is and public transit comes underneath the river. But, you know, it's tough to sell a game there. And, you know, the crowds show it. I mean, what, 12,000 last night? 8,000 in Phoenix last night?
I saw that. And it looked like not 8,000 even. But
no, that's announced. So, you know, the season ticket holders and the giveaways are part of that package as well. And then you get a game, an under-17 game with a bunch of kids. I couldn't name one of them. And you get over 12,000 in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And the NHL couldn't have a team there. No, they'd only go out to see the young kids. They'd never go see the pros.
Hey, Glenn, I don't want to go, not to go too far down the Jersey road here, but how much of the deterioration of that franchise has to do with Martin Brodeur being on the downside? You know, and how much of his genius made Lou Lamoriello look
like
a genius?
Well, he's also been hurt a while too.
Oh, that's it. But I think he has not been Martin Brodeur one reason or another.
No, and you start to see it. Like, I see his pads creeping up in height. You know, they look bigger, which tells me he wants to be bigger in the net because he knows he's not quite as acrobatic as he once was. You know, with the 32-inch pads where he could, you looked at them and you thought, boy, they're small, if anything. But he got to every puck and made every save. And, yeah, there's a lot of miles on that man's career, and he's the best goaltender that's ever played the game. His numbers show it. His wins show it. And, you know, for years they've had a certain style and culture there that that has enabled him to play under that system. You know, nobody got paid more than a certain freight, and everyone bought into the team system. And this summer they just seem to have let it all go and decided to give a guy the value of the team and let him play. You know, because Kovalchuk, when he played in Atlanta, he had his own set of rules. They were desperate to keep him. So they let this guy commit larceny and felonies all over the place. And now they've got this guy in their lineup who you got to buy into the team system. He's not wired that way, and so I think you're right, Stephen, that, you know, you're starting to see the strength of that team now has become their weakness.
Yeah, but you two loons are talking about goaltending here. I mean, here's the other truth. The Toronto Maple Leafs have a crappy offense. The New Jersey Devils have scored 21 fewer goals than the Toronto Maple Leafs. They are 20 goals behind the New York Islanders, who are the next worst offensive team. I mean, that's pathetically bad. These guys cannot put the biscuit in the basket.
Come watch our team lose and we won't score.
Yeah, other than that, it'll be great. And it's in Newark.
Yes. And you might get killed. Yeah, it's that's a marketing. There's a slogan there right there. That's a marketing campaign.
I know early on we had did, I think, the second game in New Jersey when I was working for another network. And one of the producers, Mitch Kersner, talked me into showing a whole bunch of stuff around the area, you know, bombed out buildings, barbed wired fences around cars.
Nice.
And I showed it all and basically said, hey, come to New Jersey and watch a game. Now, Barry Morrow stole it off me and used it on one of the ESPN broadcasts. And the league got so infuriated at him, they paid no attention to me, but he actually had to fly in and apologize to the mayor
of Newark.
And I got away with it scot-free. It was
attaboy.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Attaboy, Healy.
Thanks for coming. It's great. But one thing's clear, the Vancouver Canucks are a pretty darn good team. And,
yes.
You know, I look at Chicago now, and that's their nemesis. But Chicago, you know, thank you, Andrew Ladd, for going to Atlanta. Thank you, Bufflin, for going to Atlanta. They're not as strong a team as they've been the past couple of years. So this could be Vancouver's year.
The inauguration of yet another Canadian junior hockey championship should take place in a few hours from now, or maybe it won't. Is there any chance this Russian team can jump up and bite the Canadian juniors?
Oh, there is a chance, no question. It's sport, so anything can happen. But the way I saw the Canadians play against the Americans, that's a pretty possessed team that's got four deep lines that played with great passion and played a near-perfect game against an American team that was better than they were on paper. But the Americans decided to do what they do in most tournaments, and that's play at 70%, break a bunch of chairs at the Olympics, and think that they're just going to be reigned the champion. No, that's not what happens when you play with heart. I would imagine that the game this evening will be, 90% Canadian with regards to the fans. They've flocked across the border all through this whole tournament.
Yep.
They've, put lots of dollars in Bob Nicholson's jeans, lots of money in Larry Quinn's pockets, drank lots of beer, and tonight will be an electric building, and it will be very much pro-Canadian, and the first period will indicate whether we have a game at all.
Does this tournament turn your crank, Glenn? Because the only thing, the kind of guaranteed win or guaranteed final, and I know it turns the country's crank, and they love beating down whoever they get a chance to beat down, but does it work for you?
I got cut from the World Junior team way back in 1981, and so I've refused to watch a single game since then in protest. And I even actually go on a hunger strike through the entire game. No, actually, when I look at when you look at it historically, back then there were four goaltenders invited to training camp. There was Grant Fuhr and myself, and we know Grant Fuhr made the Oilers that year, so
yeah, he was all right.
Frank Caprice and Mike Moffitt, and the one guy to get cut was me. And Frank Caprice played in Vancouver. Mike Moffitt played about eight games in Boston. They won that year, I think, 8-0 against the Russians. So clearly I could have made the team and played that game. I wasn't giving up nine. But, I look back to that tournament. We showed up at the World Junior Training Camp in Kingston. There's no TV cameras. The games weren't televised. It was just so different, and this has just become a huge event that TSN has built up with so much scale that if you're in this country, you can't help but that's your brand over the Christmas holidays.
Who was the idiot who cut you? Do you remember?
Well, Mike Keenan was part of that coaching.
Oh, there you go.
Jacques Lemaire. I mean, I guess I was far too aggressive with my forecheck, so I didn't stay deep enough in my net for the 0-5 that we were playing. But Dave King was the coach, and so I've never forgiven him since.
Whatever happened to those guys anyway? They never made anything of themselves, did they?
No, Caprice played a little bit.
Oh, I meant the coaches.
He played about eight games, and the coaching staff I don't care about, but... Keenan, he ended up, we won a cup together, and I'm still not over that year as well. So there's like numerous times where him and I, their ships have collided, and it's torture for me.
So he says he hasn't watched another junior game since then.
Oh, I'm lying. Pants on fire.
Because I was going to say, if you use that same philosophy for every team that cut you, you'd be down to like three or four games that you could watch a year.
This is pants on fire. This is like Calgary proclaiming that their outdoor game won't make money. It's the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's no chance of making money.
No.
All right, Heels. We got to go.
All right, guys. Are you watching the game, Bob?
Oh, yeah, man. I'll be there.
Well, this is the first World Junior game for you, then, of the tournament.
Bite me. Glenn Healy of Hockey Night in Canada. Smart ass. We might not have him back.
Oh, we will.
I'm not going to listen to him anymore. I'm going to use his philosophy. He can come on, but I don't have to listen to him. Oh, there's music. Thank God. I thought it was a minute early. I was going to have to fill. In which case, I have to let Brunt say something. No. Too late. Our thanks to Hall of Famer Robbie Alomar, to Paul Beeston, the idiot who didn't re-sign him in 1995. What was he thinking? And to Glenn Healy, just for being Heels. Want to do tomorrow, too?
Yeah, I think so.
Nothing else planned?
I'm available.
It's going to be great when we only do 1 hour.
I'm looking forward to that.
Woo! 3 days a week. You see, if you compress it, too.
It'd be really good.
It'll be really good. Holy crap. Have a swell evening. Enjoy the hockey game if that's what you're watching. Or whatever else you're happening to be doing. And we'll see you tomorrow night if the creek don't rise on primetime. Good night from Toronto.